The field turns for home.
They're at the top of the stretch.
Top of the stretch.
They're into the stretch.
And here they come into the final furlong.
Final furlong.
Final furlong.
Into the final furlong.
They go inside the final furlong.
This is the final furlong on HRRN Live.
HRRN Live.
It's Trainer Talk Wednesday. Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome once again, everybody, to this final furlong show, Trainer Talk Edition. On this Wednesday afternoon, we welcome all of you tuning in coast to coast on Sirius Channel 93, XM 209, Internet Smartphone Channel 961. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, our producer Lee Delapina, all back with you in our Lexington, Kentucky studios here on HRRN and ready for a tremendous edition of Trainer Talk, joined by trainer Todd Pletcher in the first half, and Wesley Ward will be here to visit with us in the second half of the program this afternoon. And Todd Pletcher, somebody who has amassed more than well over 3,000 wins for his career. As a matter of fact, his total up over 3,100 at this point, and somebody who I have approached on several occasions to have on this program. We finally get all the stars to align here tonight. Todd, do you feel somewhat like a highly sought-after top recruit trying to be recruited to a specific college?
No, I'm glad that it could finally work out. It seems like juggling the schedule is always hard, but I'm glad I could be with you guys tonight.
Well, it's not like you don't have anything else to do.
Yeah, you're not too busy, are you?
No, actually, if there is such a thing as a quiet time, December might be that way. It used to be before Gulfstream started racing in December, this was the 1 month where things were a little bit quiet for us. But now that's even changed.
Yeah, and people don't realize, I think a lot of times we get caught up in looking at trainers as one-dimensional and just focused on nothing but horse racing. But Todd, you have your wife and children, and a couple of weeks ago, your daughter had a birthday party, so that was the reason that you couldn't come on the show. And I mean, it just shows a whole another side that people don't often realize is out there with trainers.
I tell you, I think sometimes that my schedule is busy, and having three kids in the 8th, 7th, and 4th grade, and what they do with sports and academics and all the extracurricular activities they have, I think actually my schedule is easy compared to theirs sometimes.
Now we know why your wife's a listener, because she's shuttling everybody to these sporting events.
Exactly.
What sports are they into, Todd?
Both my sons are playing soccer. Soccer season just ended recently, and we'll probably play some basketball this winter. And then my daughter's been playing lacrosse. So talk about an exciting afternoon. Go watch one time last fall, I watched four consecutive 9-year-old girl lacrosse games. So it's fun. It's great to watch them play. And so they're all enjoying it, and it's good stuff.
Where did they get the athleticism from? Were you an athlete growing up?
Not really. Not as good as I would have liked to have been. I mean, I tried to play, some sports, but I kind of hit that phase of my life when I was like 14 or 15. When I actually graduated high school, I think I was 6 foot, about 125 pounds. So it didn't lend to fitting in very well, especially growing up in Texas, to be a football player, for example, when we know how competitive it is there.
Well, Todd, as I told you, this show very much about your life, your background, how you got started, some of the things you've had to deal with throughout your career, as opposed to specific horses that you have in training right now. And everybody seems to have that moment that really hooks them on this sport. What was that moment for you? Take us back to the beginning.
Well, I mean, for me, the moment probably just evolved as a child. My dad trained horses from before I was born, so I was literally born into, a racing family, and was exposed to it very early on. I can remember going to the barn with my dad when I was 5 or 6 years old, and just hanging out with him and going out in the mornings, going to the races in the afternoons, and literally from childhood, always being involved in some capacity. So I don't remember a specific moment that hooked me. I think I was just hooked from the beginning.
Well, you start out like that in the family business, and people have certain expectations of what you're going to be like, and your dad was a very good trainer, but he never had the amount of horses that you have. Talk about the transition, you know, like from your dad's business to what you do now.
Well, I think my dad had tremendous foresight on coaching me and helping me get started. And one of the things that I did after, you know, I sort of had the basics down and was a hot walker for him and a groom for him and spent some time and kind of knew somewhat what I was doing around the barn, he encouraged me to spend a couple of summers working for other trainers when I got in high school. And he sent me to California one summer to work for Henry Marino, and who's been a family friend for my whole life, and he's a terrific guy and a terrific trainer. And so I spent one summer with him, and then spent one summer working for Wayne Lucas in Chicago. And then actually was fortunate enough as a senior in college, being a graduate of the Racetrack Industry Program at University of Arizona, actually got to do like an intern with Charlie Whittingham, where I actually got some college credits for it. So, you know, he encouraged me to do that. He knew that I knew the system that he had at the barn, but he wanted me to get out there and see how some other guys did it. And thankfully he had enough ends to give me opportunities to work for guys like that and get a foundation that, you know, is so hard to get and get exposed to so many high quality horses and high quality trainers and how they operate their business. So that was very, very helpful.
Todd, is there anything that you took from your dad's operation and watching him do things that you still incorporate into your practice today?
Well, you know, actually still a big part of our organization. You know, we have a training center in Ocala that he and I own together, and he runs that and breaks all the yearlings and does a significant amount of our layups and such. So, you know, his influence is big there. And the one thing that I really enjoyed growing up and doing with him was going to the yearling sales. And he was teaching me about confirmation at an early age. And to me, one of the most exciting things about buying horses and just training horses, I mean, that's really, you know, our recruiting process. And while coaches are out there looking for good running backs and, you know, basketball players and such, we're out there looking for good athletes as well. And to me, that's the most challenging part, the most interesting part. And, you know, something I enjoy a lot is just trying to learn what good horses look like. And it's a lot of fun and very challenging, always an ongoing learning process.
When we had Tom Proctor on last week, he mentioned that he wished he had worked for other people like you did. He said that was the one thing that he regretted, was he always worked for his relatives, his dad and his uncle. He never really worked for anybody else other than them. When you're working for these other guys and you pick up certain things, is there anything that stood out to you, you know, anything that one of those guys imparted to you that you use in your training methods today?
Well, I think the one part, you know, the very most basic part is just the consistency and the work ethic and the commitment to every day that it takes. And you know, when you look at Wayne and Charlie Whittingham, those are two very different trainers in a lot of ways. And yet the one thing that was very consistent with both of them is you had to get up really, really early in the morning to beat either one of those guys to the barn. And you had to stay really late to leave after they did. So, you know, the commitment is the most basic part of it. And then, you know, as far as training, I think everyone sort of is going to have their own touches. While a lot of things are very basic, and a lot of people are going to do things they're very similar in a lot of ways, and yet it might just be the subtle changes that are gonna be the difference in maybe your style versus someone else's. And I think that's something that you don't necessarily learn from someone else. You can watch and learn sort of a system and some basics, but then the specialty touches are something that you have yourself.
One thing that I was so impressed by when I was watching your operation down in Florida, you had like a set of 15 horses come out and everyone was standing there like statues, and the jocks all left the coffee room and went to their horses. It was almost like a race, and you went down and you touched the legs of every horse. And I was so impressed with your hands-on method of going over each horse and telling the riders what to do. And you don't see that in a lot of big barns. And when people want to bring up, oh, you know, Pletcher's got 300 horses and this and that, you know, I often come to your defense. I find myself being your press agent and saying, hey, listen, this guy is amazing. He touches every horse every day wherever he's at. So, you know, I don't want to hear about it. I think it's amazing what you do.
Well, thank you. I mean, you know, we've got a system down, and part of that, I think, is knowing each horse on an individual basis. And, you know, unfortunately, in our line of work, things change overnight. And a perfectly sound horse today might not be that way tomorrow. So we try to be pretty thorough in our pre-training inspections, and, you know, might alter what you do with the horse. And so we're always trying to minimize injuries, because there's no way to prevent them, but hopefully we can minimize them and do the best we can with that. But that's always a challenge.
Todd, let's go back to Charlie Whittingham for a minute. You mentioned basically being able to intern with him, so to speak, when you were at the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. What do you remember about that first time walking into the Whittingham barn there, being a kid just trying to crack into the sport somehow?
I thought it was extremely intimidating, and I obviously knew of Mr. Whittingham and all of his accomplishments, but had never actually met him in person. And so through my dad and Henry Marino, they'd sort of laid the foundation. So I remember going by the barn at Hollywood Park the afternoon that I arrived to sort of arrange things to get started the next morning. And he was very, very kind, very soft-spoken. And I just said, you know, what time should I be here tomorrow? And I remember he said, early. And so I got there at 4:15, and he was already there. He could not have been any nicer throughout it. But, you know, when you go into a situation like that, and I'd kind of grown up, you know, in the Midwest, and my dad had nice horses, but they weren't world renowned. And so you walk into the barn, and, you know, there's Ferdinand and horses like that there that just it was like, wow, this is these are the elite of the elite. And yeah, it was a great summer experience. And, you know, he was very, very generous with information and his time, and could not have been any nicer to me than he was.
You know, when Kieran McLaughlin joined us on the show a few weeks ago, Todd, he talked about D. Wayne Lucas and learning from Wayne, just like you mentioned here earlier. What's your favorite D. Wayne Lucas moment?
There were a lot of great moments there, and we had a lot of great horses and big wins, and, you know, also went through a little bit of a lull during part of the time I was there. So I sort of saw, you know, the peak in 89 when I was there, and then we had a little bit of a lull in the early 90s, and then came back on, you know, huge in the mid 90s. So I saw a little bit of the whole thing, and probably, you know, working with Wayne was an unbelievable opportunity. But I don't know how many people really know that really, and Kieran would probably say the same thing, and so would probably Mark Hennig and Dallas Stewart and a lot of guys that worked there. As much of an influence as Wayne was on us, equally or even more so in some cases, his son Jeff was a huge influence. And I spent a lot of my time working for Jeff, and to me, he's probably the most intelligent, course person that I've ever been around, and the way that he ran the barn and conducted his business was probably the single biggest influence on me in the way that I try to do my business.
Yeah, you say the way that he ran the barn. What did he do that was so special?
Well, he just, you know, he knew everything that was going on at the barn at every moment. He knew what every horse was doing, what every hot walker, groom, every person was doing. And he was a strict disciplinarian that always challenged you to be on top of things and you know, very detail-oriented and just, you know, really, really on top of it. And I think, you know, someone like that as a coach or a boss is great to keep you always thinking ahead, always, you know, what's happening, and not only what's happening right now, what's getting ready to happen, what, you know, what we're going to do in the next set. Just barn management and horse management and all those things going on at the same time. I thought it was I was very, very fortunate to get that experience.
Yeah, he was a really focused guy, and I think that's a common thread that runs through guys that are super successful in this business, and you would certainly be among those, is being focused on what you do. And there's no question about it when you see you going through your day-to-day duties as a trainer, the focus is in your eyes. I mean, you can see you're not really thinking about much else other than the horses and what you're doing with them and how they're training and what they look like when they come back and how they're cooling out. I mean, that single-mindedness, I think, is the hallmark of a great trainer.
Yeah, I think you know, it's hard to have a lot else going on when you're focused in on that, especially when you have a number of horses and you know, there's so much, especially in the morning training hours, when you think about, you know, really there's a window of about 3.5-4 hours during the morning that really basically everything evolves around. So, you know, that part is so critical and evaluating everything and preparing for the races. So it's some ways it can be a pretty intense 4 or 5 hours, and in a lot of ways it's very enjoyable as well.
Trainer Todd Pletcher, our special guest on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Todd, you're coming up on the 17-year anniversary of your first winner. Tell us that story of Majestic Number.
Well, I was pretty fortunate to kind of pick her up. I'd become acquaintances with Victor DeVivo and Ramona DeVivo when we were training for when I was helping Wayne, and kind of got to know them a little bit, and they said that they had a filly that they would be interested in sending me, and so got started. I think originally with 7 horses at Hialeah, and she was one of them. She had run once before for another trainer in New York, probably about 6 months before that, and got some time off. So she came to us and she trained pretty well. And that time, I think in her first start, she'd finished 5th, beaten 12 lengths or something like that. So that was in a maiden special weight. So I thought we had a little bit of an opportunity maybe to run her for that time. They had a maiden 80 down to 75, and thought she'd trained well enough to maybe win a maiden special weight, but she'd probably be pretty tough in there. So fortunate enough that we ran her there and no one claimed her, and she won and ran her back, I think about a month later, and she won in one of the vans. So it was that was big to get that first one out of the way.
Yeah. And more than 3,100 have followed. So unbelievable accomplishment since 1996, a Majestic Number. Todd, one of my favorite portions of these trainer talk shows is listening to trainers talk about some of the horses that for one reason or another really stand out in their minds. When they look back on their career, for whatever reason, this horse or these horses really seem to stick out. What are the few that when you look back on your career, you're going to remember no matter what?
Well, I've always said that I thought that the two horses that probably meant the most to getting my career going were Jersey Girl and More Than Ready, and those were the first two really good horses that we had. Jersey Girl was the first grade one winner that we had. And More Than Ready, you know, he really stormed onto to the scene in 99, I believe, in his two-year-old season. And so that was kind of the first time that that I think we had horses that were sort of front cover of the racing foreign types. And, you know, if you can prove that you can train those type of horses and win grade ones, then I think it just it provides you with so many more opportunities. So that those were the two that always stand out to me.
More Than Ready, he's kind of become your version of Bill Mott's Theatrical. Bill Mott said, you know, Theatricals did a lot for him and put his kids through college and everything. More Than Ready's kind of been that way for you.
He really has. A kid, Jim Scatorci, all the time with, you know, now with English Channel and Scat Daddy and More Than Ready out there. And I always tell him these are the gifts that keep giving, you know. They're just, you know, they're turned into be really good sires. And it's great to have a breeding right to those type of horses. And, yeah, it's been a lot of fun to see their offspring. And actually with Jersey Town, that was pretty exciting for me to see a horse win the Seaguar Mile a couple years ago that was by Spitestown, who I trained out of Jersey Girl, who was my first grade one winner. So it makes you start to feel old when you see stuff like that happen.
Todd Pletcher, our special guest here on Trainer Talk. Todd, you mentioned, I should say this, that Phil Mickelson for a long time in golf was the golfer that was the best golfer never to win a major. He finally breaks through. I think a lot of people at one point considered Todd Pletcher the best trainer never to win a Kentucky Derby. You break through in 2010 with Super Saver. Look back on that experience, and was it just a relief to get the monkey off your back?
Yeah, it's interesting because you always envision how you're going to feel after a race, or you know, dream about winning a race like the Kentucky Derby. And for some reason, when Rags to Riches won the Belmont, that to me was probably the most excited I've been right after a race. The history of it and beating a horse like Curlin by a nose and the way the whole race unfolded and stumbling at the gate and all that. To me, that was the most exciting and sort of just went numb after the Derby when Super Saver won. And I think part of it was because, you know, the buildup had just gotten to the point where, you know, 0-for-25 or whatever it was, and sort of couldn't read anything without it saying, you know, Todd Pletcher 0-for-24 in the Derby. And enough's enough. But, you know, I feel like in a lot of ways that our Derby record is not that bad, and now that we have a win, you know, I think it's okay. I think anytime, as a goal, you know, we've been fortunate enough, like this year, to I think win 27% of our races. And I know when I worked for Wayne, we always talked about 20% kind of being that goal. So I think, you know, if you can produce those kind of numbers during the year, you're going to be lucky and great at stakes if you can win 15%. When you get to the Classics, if you can win 10%, I think you're doing unbelievably well. So our numbers aren't that far off of it, and had a couple of seconds, and it was maybe not quite everything that I hoped it'd be, just because I think of the record leading into it sort of took away from it a little bit.
You're the first trainer that I've ever heard that's won the Kentucky Derby that says, I guess our Derby record's okay. Most guys, you know, they get a custom license plate. They have their tombstone chiseled. You know, if they might run 5,000 horses in the Derby to get that one. I think you're very humble.
Well, yeah, I mean, love for it to be better. So all we can do is keep trying.
Well, you got a few chances, I think.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, Todd, because Doug O'Neill, when he joined us on the show a couple of weeks ago, we asked him if that winning the Derby makes you want to get back there even more. Is there something that drives you that's even stronger inside of you now? Because now you have that taste of it. You know what it's like to be at the top of the mountain. Is that kind of the feeling that you have now trying to get back there?
Well, I think everyone that's been there, you know, or hasn't been there even, you know, wants to get there again. The one thing that I can definitely say from a training perspective is you see how much it means to the owners and how much excitement they get and to participate in the Derby. That's the one thing to me that is really rewarding about the whole Derby experience is how much fun and excitement that the owners of the horses get and how much they want to be there. And, you know, for everybody that's walked over there, and that's become a big deal for the owners to do now, and you walk over there and you see that 100,000 people just sort of sitting over on top of you while you're walking over. I mean, it's an impressive scene. It's a intense scene. It's electric. And for the owners to get there, to me, that's as fun as being there myself and the excitement they get, you know, for a lot of people, that's a lifetime moment, you know?
Well, Todd, time flies when we're having fun, and just about 1 minute left here before we have to wrap up this edition of Trainer Talk and move on to Wesley Ward, who's going to join us here in the second half of the show. But just briefly, talk about your wife, Tracy, and what she means to your operation. And I know she works very closely with you, and I know her support has to mean an awful lot to you.
Well, you know, I've often said that probably the toughest job in the racing industry is being a trainer's wife. And, you know, the time commitment that I have at work is substantial. And to know that you have someone at home that, you know, not only is a good spouse, but is a great mother and someone that, you know, like, I don't have to worry about what the kids are doing and they're being taken care of, and that her schedule taking care of three children is crazy busy. And you know, a lot of times I'm missing out on a lot of stuff that I'd like to be a part of, but, you know, she carries the bulk of the weight there in a big way. And, you know, to not have to worry about those type of things is allows me to focus on the stuff I do. So it's a huge help.
He's trainer Todd Pletcher. He's nice enough to spend some time with us here tonight. Todd, we appreciate it. All the best this year, and we're going to look forward to seeing you down in Florida. Thank you for taking the time.
That was my pleasure, guys.
All right, trainer Todd Pletcher. Great stuff, huh?
Yeah, fantastic.
Wow.
First-class guy.
All right, trainer Wesley Ward's up next. We'll get to a break. We're back with more. This is HRN Live on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Imagine having 80 channels of live, full-card, uninterrupted simulcast feeds delivered direct to your home television for just $50 a month. Choose from your favorite thoroughbred, harness, quarter horse, and greyhound tracks in North America and internationally. Call Dish Network at 1-888-677-5487 and ask for RTN, the Racetrack Television Network. RTN is the only place where you can see every race from every simulcast every day.
RacehorseReport.com.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it?
What is it, baby?
International racing, weekend stakes recaps, always free selections, great stories, workout information, racing news, handicapping tips, spot plays, and more.
It's as marvelous and as simple as that.
Join thousands of other thoroughbred racing fans by going to RacehorseReport.com. Make RacehorseReport.com your number one source for thoroughbred racing information.
That's great.
RacehorseReport.com.
Introducing the Wizards Betting Window, a new wagering product available exclusively at DRF.com. The Wizards Betting Window takes the work out of wagering by giving you easy-to-use wagering recommendations for every race in the card at top tracks around the country. Both longtime horse players and racing newcomers can benefit from using the Betting Window, which suggests not only win and place bets, but also exotics including exactas, trifectas, daily doubles, and dime superfectas. And what really sets this product apart is the Betting Window Final Edition. Just download the Betting Window while you do your handicapping in advance, and then receive an update 30 to 60 minutes before the first race post time. You'll get all the latest scratches, current track and weather conditions, and late equipment changes. The Betting Window Final Edition will be delivered right to your inbox, so you can receive it anywhere. So use the Wizards' best wagering strategies to help maximize your returns. Visit drf.com/wizbw to try it today. That's drf.com/wizbw for the Wizards Betting Window.
Don't miss your chance to participate in the biggest handicapping event of the year, the Daily Racing Form NTRA National Handicapping Championship, presented by Sovereign Stable and Treasure Island Las Vegas. To be eligible, simply log on to nhctour.com and register for just $50. Compete in handicapping tournaments throughout the country and win your seat at the NHC to be held January 13, 2013, Treasure Island in Las Vegas, where one lucky player will win an estimated $1 million and an Eclipse Award as Handicapper of the Year. Visit nhctour.com to see a complete tournament schedule and register today.
Want to know what we're up to?
Yeah.
Then log on to horseracingradio.net.
It appears that the website has become alive.
Horseracingradio.net is your official home for HRRN on the web. Read our blogs, download our podcasts, link up to our Twitter and Facebook pages, listen to live streaming of all of our broadcasts, and much more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
It's Trainer Talk Wednesday on the Final Furlong on HRRN Live.
Mike Pena, Jude Feld, back with you on Trainer Talk here on the Final Furlong Show on HRRN. Fun visit with Todd Pletcher in the first half of the show. Wesley Ward's going to join us here in just a couple of moments for the second half, and really looking forward to hearing his story going from a jockey now to a trainer. That's not so unusual. We see a lot of riders that segue into being a trainer after their riding career is completed, but to go from being an Eclipse Award-winning apprentice rider and now a trainer at the top of his game is amazing.
Yeah, he's had a very interesting career and continues it on. I mean, he's still a young guy and he's got plenty of wins ahead of him everywhere. He's everywhere you want to be. I know he's everywhere I want to be. Never too far from the water.
You know, and it was great to hear Todd kind of open up, talk about his life a little bit, you know. And I think a lot of people, when they see Todd Pletcher, he's always, whenever you see him on an interview online or on television, he's always so focused on the task at hand. And you could hear him talk about that in the first half of the show.
Mm-hmm.
He's always so focused that I think he comes across as being a bit reserved, and he's not.
He's a very smart guy. He's got a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
One of the great Todd Pletcher moments there was actually a couple that I've experienced, but one that stands out in my mind was at the Hall of Fame inductions this year when he introduced John Velasquez and how great he was, you know, with his introduction and how much humor he injected into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was serious and it was humorous, but I think it was a whole different side of Todd Pletcher that a lot of people don't get to see. And I remember he won like 3 Derby preps in one afternoon when we were at Gulfstream. And the last one was at Fairgrounds in Louisiana.
Yes,
and I can't remember
right.
The horse it was.
That's right.
But the horse barely won the race. And he turned and looked at me and he said, "That was the longest 2 minutes in sports." And I was like, is this horse ever going to get there? You know, and everybody that was around just cracked up. And, you know, that was a pretty funny line, especially for a guy who was under tremendous pressure that day to be able to pop off like that after the race was over. I thought it was fantastic. So,
well, another trainer who has experienced a tremendous amount of success is trainer Wesley Ward. And he's nice enough to spend some time with us here tonight. Wesley, thanks for being here.
Oh, you're welcome.
Wesley, a winner of over 1,000 races throughout his career, closing in on 1,100. I think you're getting pretty close, Wesley.
Yeah, hopefully.
Who's counting?
Well, Wesley, take us back to the beginning. A lot of people probably don't realize that you didn't start off wanting to be a trainer necessarily. You started off as a jockey. Tell us about that.
Yeah, my whole life when I was just a little boy, my dad's a trainer, and he was a jockey. And I always, you know, dreamed of being a rider. That was my whole everything.
You know, I think I had read a story somewhere about you being put on a horse at the age of 4 years old by your grandfather, and things didn't go exactly according to plan. Is that true?
Yeah. I'm born and raised in Washington State, but my mother's from Belmont, right by, she was born and raised right there by Belmont Park, and her father was Jim Daly, the outrider there. So we'd go back for the holidays, and I could always ride before I could even walk. And my dad was so excited and proud of me, and he put me on my grandfather's outriding pony right there by Belmont Park, he slapped the horse on the ass, and away we went, and I pulled him up and brought him right back, and my grandfather was dying because this little kid that could ride a horse like that, and pulled him up, and he got really scared, though, because he'd never seen a little guy like that, you know, especially being a New Yorker there, being able to ride like that. And he asked me, and he said, Wes, he said, were you scared of that? And I looked at him, and, you know, it was no problem for me because I was born and raised riding those things. And I said, no. He said, no problem at all. So I was, you know, it's just he'd never seen, you know, little guys like that that are from the country, and to me it was nothing.
not used to the ways of the Old West, huh?
No.
A city boy.
Yeah.
How does a kid growing up, you mentioned in Washington, how does a kid growing up in Washington end up becoming hooked on horse racing?
Well, I'm from the country, but Yakima Meadows is, you know, I'm born and raised about 20-25 miles from Yakima Meadows. So my dad was a trainer there, and then in the summers we'd go over to Seattle and Long Acres every summer. And, you know, that's all I knew just since I was a kid, just growing up, is being on the backside of a racetrack. And every winter when the track would shut down, we'd be breaking and training horses all winter long there for as long as I know. And that's all I knew. And I always aspired to be a jockey. And, you know, and my dream came true when I was, you know, started riding the races when I was 12 years old at the county fairs, and was absolutely ready to ride when on my 16th birthday I'd already won a couple hundred races on the fair. So the groundwork was laid out for me as far as a tremendous agent that my grandfather, prior to his death, because he died before he ever got to see me ride, was Lenny Goodman, who was the greatest agent at the time in racing. And so when I came up into New York about a couple weeks before I turned 16 in early March, the first day I rode, I was on four or five horses at Aqueduct, and within 4 or 5 days, I'd already won 6 or 7 races, already started my apprenticeship out, because everybody was anticipating me coming in there. And I just, you know, everything was laid out for me, and I had this fantastic year, and it was just a young guy's dream come true.
Yeah, you won the Eclipse Award, and I mean, you were a sensation. I mean, everybody was talking about you.
Yeah, it was just great time in my life. You know, everything went according to plan, and I just couldn't do any wrong. And it was just, you know, every day I woke up, I got to come out and breeze horses and ride fantastic race horses in the afternoon, and, you know, won the titles at Belmont Park and Aqueduct, and, you know, at 16 years of age. And it was just fantastic. I'll tell you, it was just, like I say, it was my dream come true.
What were some of the best horses that you rode during that time?
Well, eventually, you know, I went on to ride Ferdinand, and I rode a lot of great horses for a lot of great trainers. But, you know, even from the onset, I knew I was going to have a weight problem. You know, even though I was only just a little boy when I first started riding, I was 16 years old and weighed 102 or 103 pounds. I knew, you know, I was following in my father's footsteps where he, you know, eventually grew out of his job, and I knew that that was going to be the case myself. So, you know, as I got heavier, you know, as a couple of years went on, I had to go on to some of the smaller tracks where I could, you know, do a little bit heavier in weights. And at that time in racing, weight was really a big issue as opposed to now. You know, a lot of the riders are a little heavier, and you can get away with doing 16 or 17 or 18. Then at the time there was only one rider that they rode at the premier tracks that could do a weight of 117. That was Lafitte Pinkai. Other than that, he was the greatest. So, you know, people would overlook his weight for his ability, but anybody else, you know, if you were that high, you know, you had to go to a lesser track. And I loved to ride so much. Some of the last years I rode, I went over to Europe and rode where it was a little heavier. And when it came down to the last day, I'll tell you, it was tough. But I knew when I left the jockey's room the last day I rode at Arlington Park that no matter what I did in life, it was never going to be as tough as this.
Yeah, and you mentioned going over to Europe, Italy, Singapore, Malaysia, if I'm not mistaken, was another place that you had the chance to ride. Talk about some of those experiences.
You know, it was a great experience, especially for a young guy, you know, to go all over the world and gain the experience, worldly experience, you know. I had to give up high school. You know, I never went a day in high school. But I have a world of experience in traveling all over the world and learning what, you know, how other countries are. It was just fantastic. You know, horse racing has just been wonderful to me.
Is that part of the influence now when you take these horses, you know, out of the country and you run in Barbados, you run in Great Britain, Royal Ascot, and other places that you've been? Is that part of the influence because you're kind of used to it and it's in your blood now, the traveling aspect of the game?
Well, you know, I mean, I like to do different things. You know, I've been around the world and I know what type of horse and how the horse is doing and what it takes to go over to win. You know, of course, it's a risk and a gamble anywhere you go anywhere to race. But I try to think that when I do something like this, that, you know, the odds are in my favor to win. Obviously, going over to Ascot was a huge risk, and I was really up against it. But fortunately for me, the first year I went, I was lucky enough to win a couple races over there with some young horses. It is a great thrill, you know, to get out of, you know, your comfort zone and go somewhere and you know, in another country and win.
Yeah, talk about that trip to Ascot, Wesley, that first time over there. You mentioned it being a huge risk for you. Why was it such a big risk?
Well, I thought about it for years. You know, when I first started training, you know, I took about a year off from riding and to think about what I wanted to do. And I was going to go back to school and go through the racetrack industry program. And Mr. Duchessois said, you know, had I completed that, he was going to give me a job at Arlington, which is the last place that last summer I rode was at Arlington Park at the new track that he had just built, the new grandstand. And, you know, I was going to take him up on that offer and go there. But once I stopped riding, I started seeing life through not only just a jockey's eyes, and that's all I knew was, you know, through a rider's eyes or a jockey's eyes, because I'd rode since I was a little boy. And when I stopped, I was 21 years old and didn't really have a clue as to what I was going to do. And I really got to see what life was like, you know, for everybody else, rather than waking up in the morning, working horses and riding your races and then, you know, going on about everything the next day. And I really wanted to sort of stay with the horses. And that's when I knew I wanted to be a trainer. And so then I went on and assisted my dad for a little bit in Washington and then went on from there.
Well, you obviously made an excellent choice, and you've been successful everywhere that you've raced. You know, I always call you the international man, but the thing that you're really noted for now is your adeptness with young horses. And why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I tell you what, I found a little bit of a niche in Southern California racing, to where when I knew I really wanted to be on the A circuits. And so I went into Southern California after about a year, and it was took me 6 months to win my first race down there, and it was just really super tough at every level, especially with the horses I went down with from Seattle. And so I got to looking at it, and they had, at the time, they started the early two-year-old races there. And most of the better horses came later on. They came out later on, like most of the horses that they are yearlings that they bought for, you know, the higher prices. They would show up later on in Del Mar and at Santa Anita in the fall. So, but the purses for a maiden special at that time were still like $50,000. So all of the the lessons I've learned when I was younger in breaking and training the horses, I time and applied them to buying cheaper, young, type-year-looking, fast-looking yearlings, you know, that were relatively inexpensive, and I started breaking them early, and I went right on with them, and I targeted those early races to where if I could buy a yearling for $5,000 or $10,000 and put the, you know, 4 or 5 months training into them and really center them in on speed that their physical attributes sort of I knew would come out later on, that I could target those early big purses and sort of find a hole in the Southern California circuit to where I could be very competitive and make a profit at and be able to pay my bills. And so that's what I did for the first few years I was down there. I bought a lot of those type of horses, and I had a lot of success to where, you know, the first time the horse run, he had 30,000 to the winner. And then I, you know, 3 or 4 months later, when everybody started winning races, I'd have that much more time to prepare them for their second start, either by selling them or by putting them in a $40,000 or $50,000 claiming race, and they'd be claimed. And then I'd take the profit, and I just roll it back over into more horses. And that niche started to work for me for several years until I finally got going as a trainer there and started picking up more clients and better horses. And, you know, it's led on to even now today I try to use that similar tactics and have success early. And that's one of the reasons why I always thought about going over to England, because over there, you know, a lot of their horses I'm sure would be coming out later on in the summer, a lot of their better two-year-olds. And Ascot coming up in early June or the middle of June, I have a gap there to where you could run at such a prestigious meeting such as Ascot with a very precocious two-year-old that was very, very schooled in several different and really came through to where he, you know, in order to go over there, he had to prove that he was good enough to go to win here first and go over there and have some success. And, it, you know, it was a big risk going, but I really thought I'd, you know, and I'd watched it over there for several years, and I really wanted to go to do it, but I really just didn't have the horses to go at the time or that particular right horse to go at the time. And so I, you know, talked to several of my owners and sort of convinced them into going and taking a shot at it, and we had success, and it was, and I tell you what, it was just great.
Trainer Wesley Ward, our special guest on Trainer Talk on the Final Furlong Show on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Wesley, earlier when you talked about possibly going back to the University of Arizona and the racetrack industry program, you talked about Mr. Dutcheswaugh at Arlington, and you mentioned that you became accustomed to looking at life through jockey's eyes because that was all you had ever known. How much does that experience now help you with training horses, especially young horses, having that other side of the fence type of experience, so to speak?
I'm sorry. I'm having a little trouble hearing. What'd you say?
In terms of you being a former jockey, now training horses, how does that experience as a jockey, a former jockey, help you now with training horses, especially your young ones?
Oh, I think it really helps. In that, you know, I'm there right now. I'm just finishing up, and I finish about this time every day. And not only the jockey experience I've had, but also from just about every winter, my dad and I would end up breaking about 20 or 30 horses all winter long. And that's the experience that really helped me, where I'm able to break the horses in myself and really have a good handle on each and every one of these yearlings, now coming two-year-olds here, to where I take them from never being ridden to, and everybody that works for me has worked for me for forever now. I mean, the same staff I've had for, you know, 10, 15 years, to where that we can, every day you can watch the horses from the first day you get on them until their first few works. And you know which ones, you know, when you start at the gate, which ones come out of the gate, to where you really have a good handle on to which ones are your best. And that's what really helps me to determine all that.
So you you evaluate each horse, and then you plan. You're obviously a very good planner. You decide where to send them based on their precociousness and what type of race you're going to run them in.
Yeah. You know, once you get them going, you can see which ones are going to make it early and which ones need a little bit more time to where you won't push them at all. You won't even work them at all because they're, you know, bigger, longer, ganglier type distance horses and not the speedier types that are going to be earlier on. And also after that, you know, even those ones that look more precocious, those are the ones that when you start breezing them, you can tell which one have more ability than the others. And through each work that goes by each week, you can see which ones are rising to the top of the crop that you have.
Wesley, there's a whole another dimension about you that people may not know. You've recently dabbled in some standardbred horses as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been very lucky with Dave Reed, wonderful guy. You know, they've started dabbling into the thoroughbreds, and you know, by chance we met each other at Saratoga, and with Dave comes Frank Antonacci, and I just so happened Dave invited me to a sale there last fall, and they put me in on a couple of these standardbreds, so we'll see what happens. I might have a career in driving now.
Yeah. How about that? Is that a consideration?
Yeah.
Have you ever tried that before?
I have to ask my newfound buddy, Ray Schnichter, if he can give me a couple pointers.
There you go.
Have you ever been in the sulky before?
I tell you, a little bit. Not enough to say that I know anything what I'm doing, but we'll see what happens.
Well, you're a natural horseman, so I would imagine you'd pick it up rather quickly, and you still have that clock in your head, don't you?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a completely separate game. So.
Yeah, it's a lot slower clock over there.
I think that they left the racehorses in my hands, so I think I'll let the standardbreds in theirs and hopefully roll the dice and we'll have some luck.
That's good.
Wesley, when you look back over your career, who is the person or people that had the biggest influence and helped you the most?
I'll tell you what, I've learned so much, you know, all over the world. Like I say, you know, from the first day I rode at Aqueduct on my birthday, on my 16th birthday, I knew that there was going to be an end to that. And so I always tried to pay attention. Rode for some fantastic trainers like Charlie Whittingham. He was a guy that I was listening to Todd earlier there about Charlie and asking him what time, you know, he should be at the barn. He said early. I can remember that I'd won the Eclipse Award, and the following year I won the Eclipse Award and was presented it to it in California. And so in my mind, being a young guy, 16 years old, I'd always wanted to go to California to ride. And after I lost my apprenticeship and things got a little slow, I said, this is the time to go. So at 17, I went out to California. But my whole life, all I knew was win. You know, no matter when I was a 12-year-old kid, I'd rode 6 races at the Busch Tracks and I'd win 5 of them. And then when I started being an apprentice in New York, like I say, it didn't take very long. And I was leading rider in the fall of that year at Belmont Park and in the wintertime at Aqueduct. And so all I knew was win. And when I moved to California, I expected the same result. I thought, you know, I'm going to show up here in California and 17-year-old mine and all you've ever done is win. And, you know, I'm going to take right off. Well, I went the whole meet at Del Mar without a winner. First time that's ever happened to me. And so about a couple weeks into it, I decided I'm not going to just show up here at the track at 7 o'clock and grab a cup of coffee and see whatever my agent had lined up for me to work that day. I said, I got to start making some changes and figure out how I'm going to, get on some of these liver horses. And so I figured I'd start with the top guy, Mr. Whittingham. So at the time, Rodney Rash was his assistant. I went to his barn and I said, what time would you like? Do you have anything to work? And no, we're fine today. So next day I got there a little earlier, about 6:30. And I said, Rodney, what? He said, Mr. Whittingham, he says he's raced up there in Seattle when he was younger. I said, he'll like you if you keep showing up here. So next day I got there at 6. And no, we're okay, son, he'd say. And next day I got there at 5:30. And okay, son, we're all right. Next day I got there at 4:30 in the morning. I figured I'm going to be there right when he comes in. He said, no. He said, we're okay, son. He said, but keep checking. I like your I'm thinking, man, this guy doesn't even know who I am. You know, I just won the Eclipse Award, and you know, can you at least give me a shot to work a horse? So I figured, no matter what, I'm going to be there before Charlie gets there. So the next day, I set my alarm clock. I got to the barn at 3:30 in the morning. Del Mar. This is midway through Del Mar. I hadn't even won a race. He was there. At 3:30 in the morning, Charlie was there. But he said to me, he said, I know I see what you're trying to do now, son. He says, but I'll tell you what. If you come tomorrow, I'll let you work a horse. I said, great. What time do you want? You don't have to come at 3:30. You just come here and we did actually get there at 4:45 in the morning. I got there at 4:45 in the morning. Charlie was the first one on, as you know, Jude.
Yeah.
The first one on the track. And the first set worked, and he had the greatest horses, Lord at War, Greiton, all these great horses. And he let me work a horse every day. 4:45 in the morning, we set out. And I worked horses all through from that half of Del Mar, no matter if I rode out of town in a stake or whatever. I always make sure I flew back that night so I could be there at 4:45 in the morning. I worked all through the last half of Del Mar, all through the Pomona meet. He never rode me on a horse. But opening day at Santa Anita at Oak Tree, he put me on, and I won on Temerity Prince, and I won the ancient title opening day at Santa Anita at Oak Tree, and I was off to the races from there. He rode me on Ferdinand and all these wonderful horses, and he just, and I tell you, more than anything, I knew, like I said, I paid attention to how he trained, and I always would ask him questions, and he was just a great guy. Even after I started training, I got really lucky when I first started training, and the first couple of sales I went to, I bought a horse named Unfinished Simp just by luck for not much money. And the horse, as a two-year-old, he was a decent two-year-old, but I gave him a little time, and then at three, he was really a good horse, and I ended up winning right off the bat, and that's what helped me out as a trainer is I got a really good horse to train. And I made it all the way to the Breeders' Cup. He was in the Breeders' Cup mile against Barathea, and about a couple weeks before the race, we had a little bit of a problem with the horse. And so I didn't know what to do, and the horse is in Churchill Downs, and I really didn't know anybody. So I flew back to Santa Anita, and I said, I went over to Charlie's barn. I said, look, Charlie, I said, I just got this horse, and he's in the Breeders' Cup, and I really don't know any veterinarians or who to talk to. Who can you tell me that could help me? And he said, just 1 second, son. He went over to the phone, and he called Dr. Harthill. He said, Doc, he says, I got this young boy that used to ride for me. He says, he's going to be back in Kentucky tomorrow. He's hoping he could go over the horse with you. And I flew back, and Dr. Harthill, I mean, Charlie couldn't have done me a better favor. We went over the horse from stem to stern, and we changed the shoes and this and that, and the horse got beat just about a half a length right on the money in the Breeders' Cup mile. And I tell you, he was just a fantastic, wonderful guy, with just a wealth of knowledge that was unbelievable.
Wesley Ward, our special guest tonight on Trainer Talk. Wesley, hard to believe we're just about out of time, but we want to thank you for being here, and a podcast of the show will be available later on tonight, or actually tomorrow, at horseracingradio.net. And always a pleasure to talk with you. So much fun, and really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, no problem. Thank you very much for having me.
Great job, Wesley.
All right, thank you, Jude.
Wesley Ward. Wow, what a great story, huh? Charlie, yeah. Whittingham.
That's the kind of stuff I love. Of course, that was more my era, but I love sitting here and listening to these guys talk about those days. I mean, it was true about Charlie. Good Lord, you could never beat him to the barn.
3:30 in the morning.
Yeah, I remember one
and
day.
He was there.
It was pouring down rain. Do we have enough time?
Yeah.
It was pouring down rain, and I'm walking in the barn the same time Charlie, and I only had one horse. And Charlie says to me, do you have anything to work? And I said, yeah, I was going to work this horse a mile. And he says, they're going to open the gates for me, and I'm going to take Perot out there, and I'm going to work him. And if you're there with me, you'll get on the track, because they're going to lock the gates as soon as we get through.
Sure.
So I went over. I got Joe Steiner out of bed. He was working for Johnny Longden. I said, hurry up, get dressed. You got to work this horse a mile. I go over, get my horse ready, tack him up, meet Charlie at the gate. They open the gates. We walk through. The guard locks the gates again. No clockers, because they all told him the track wasn't going to open. My horse worked a mile in 1:38.3. It was the first time Joe Steiner had ever worked a horse a mile. That's how old Joe was.
Wow.
He was like 16 years old working for Johnny Longden. And later on, the horse ran, Shoemaker rode the horse, and he won.
Wow, great
stuff.
Say
late.
Wesley Ward, now known for mentoring young riders as well. He's really good about that. He helped Christian Santiago Reyes to his Eclipse Award campaign in 2009, Errol Smith in 99 as well. So really enjoyable visits here. Wesley Ward, Todd Pletcher. If you missed any portion of the show, again, a podcast available at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Make sure you check that out later on tomorrow. Follow us on social media, HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and see our entire 2013 broadcast schedule, horseracingradio.net. We're back tomorrow, 3 o'clock Eastern, our listener call-in show, 6 to 7. For Lee Delapina, Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you then.
Good night, Barbados.